welcome to the weekly podcast from the Church of England. In this week's programme, we meet a woman who has just been licensed as a reader in the Diocese of Chichester and hear her story of faith, including how she coped with her loss of sight. And the Church of England's Chief Education Officer explains more about his vision for the future of education. But first, the Bishop of Guildford has called on the government to allow more refugees into the UK. The Right Reverend Andrew Watson says the target of 20,000 refugees over 5 years falls short of what we can achieve.
This is such a major world event, really, the refugees pouring out of Syria in very large numbers. And increasingly, I felt that 20,000 over 5 years as the absolute maximum is too low a number. My own grandparents took in a German Jewish refugee family just before the Second World War, who lived with them for 7 or 8 years before returning to Germany afterwards. And I felt we really need to encourage not necessarily that action, but that sort of generosity, open-heartedness, which I think can be lacking in some of the modern debate.
People may be wondering at this time whether or not they should be looking to take a refugee into their home and how to respond. What's the sort of advice you're hearing on this issue?
I think that quite rightly the advice is that we are looking for good permanent housing and that just taking refugees in might be okay for a week or two but isn't going to work longer term. And of course there are big safeguarding issues and so on as well. I think the main aim is that all of us work together, the local councils, the government, the churches and charities, in order to find good permanent solutions to this issue.
And the church has issued some safeguarding guidelines on this subject. Can you appreciate, however, that the authorities, the local authorities, have concerns that they won't be able to cope with such an influx?
I can understand that locally. We have a situation in my own diocese in North East Hampshire where the towns there have taken in a very large number, 10,000 or more, of Nepalese over the past few years, and they're quite understandably saying we can't take any more. On the other hand, across the country as a whole, I think there are places that could be taking considerably more and would be very open to doing that.
What stories are you hearing from parishes in your diocese? What are people doing at the moment? What is it they're asking for and what is it you're asking them to do?
It's fantastic how many churches are getting involved in raising money, raising support of different kinds, clothing and food donations and all the rest. There was one particularly exciting initiative in Guildford called Refutee, which was a great event. It's well highlighted on our website at covguildford.org.uk/refugees, where they very much engaged the local community and raised over £4,000 in the process, which is going to go to the Refugee Council.
And is this an issue on which you are seeing communities coming together in support, or are there tensions there?
I think there are tensions, and when you look at our history, where we took in European Jews in the 1930s, where we took in Ugandan Asians in the light of Idi Amin's campaign, where we've taken in Vietnamese boat people, there have always been tensions. There have been some people saying we should take more, other people saying we don't have capacity. But I do think as a nation, we've generally been generous within these kind of situations, and rightly so. We are incredibly fortunate and well-off as a nation and need to look out for those who are less so.
And what sort of response are you calling for from parishes?
We're acting on a five-pronged response, which we've called PEACE. It stands for pray. Really important that we're praying about this situation, not least that in Syria itself, peace and justice will be restored. Educate, really encouraging people to be educated on the issues. Act, some of the kind of things we're seeing the parishes doing. Campaign and engage. And especially we're really encouraging parishes to engage others in the discussion to try and break through some of the sort of hard-heartedness that you do find in some places.
What's the overriding responsibility of the church to respond in this sort of instance?
In the Bible, in the book of Leviticus, chapter 19, which famously says, love your neighbour as yourself, it also says, love the foreigner who lives among you as you love yourself. And I think it's incredibly important that we are opening our doors, not indiscriminately, of course, we can't do that, but carefully, sensibly, to those who are in a really difficult situation. There's some very good words spoken by the Anglican Bishop of Jerusalem, the Most Reverend Dr. Munir Annis. He says, when we turn blind eyes on the wars that are going on in other continents, we may soon find it happening at our own doorsteps. And I think we will find that unless we are really doing what we can in this situation.
The Right Reverend Andrew Watson, the Bishop of Guildford. The Church of England's Education Office is looking at how to develop teachers and leaders in a more effective way to better equip them to deliver the Church of England's vision for education. I spoke to the Chief Education Officer for the Church of England, the Reverend Nigel Genders. He explained more about the work.
Church of England schools are really popular throughout the country. Our schools serve, as you know, 1 million children across the country. They're oversubscribed. Parents want to send their children to our schools because they recognise in them something of the broad vision that we have for education, because it's about enabling children to really flourish. And what we want is for all schools to be able to have access to that kind of education and that richer, deeper, broader curriculum. And so this is about making sure that we come up with a means of enabling that to happen, not just in our schools, but to equip and to train teachers everywhere to be able to do this.
So what are the challenges that schools are facing?
Well, you may have seen reports today that one of the many issues that schools face is the shortage of teachers and leaders in schools. They say that the training that they're provided with doesn't always help them to focus on those broader issues, that it tends to be narrowed to just thinking about, you know, particular things which they'll be held accountable for, rather than having this broader vision for, you know, a hugely, you know, diverse and encouraging education which they can give to all of their children. And so for us, we need to make sure that we're enabling teachers and leaders to be trained more effectively so that they can really deliver that vision for education.
So how are you going to address the issues you've got?
Well, it's really important for us to realise that this is something which requires everybody to be part of. It's not about what we do at the centre, but this is something which requires schools and parishes and dioceses. It requires clergy and ministry teams and teachers and leaders across the whole country to come together who share our vision for a more powerful collaborative network that can really change the face of education in this country.
So are you looking for people to give their observations on what could be done?
Absolutely. We're engaged now in a very large-scale piece of consultation work where we're going to be talking to heads and to teachers and to people working in higher education institutions and in parishes and getting their feedback on what we need to do to really make this work and how we can, you know, take all of their energy and their efforts to bring this to be a huge movement for education in this country for the common good.
The Reverend Nigel Genders. Finally this week, we meet a newly licensed reader from the Diocese of Chichester. Sheila Fordham lost her sight and has been supported in her reader training by the Royal National Institute for the Blind and the diocese using Braille resources and materials. Ben Hollabon spoke to Sheila and started by asking her how her licensing service went.
The licensing service that has just taken place was absolutely wonderful. I was very scared because I have poor sight and I knew I had to repeat an oath, obviously, of loyalty to the bishop and an oath about how I would endeavour to undertake my ministry. And I thought the least I can do is to learn this off by heart. And I thought that we would have to make that oath in the cathedral in front of the congregation. So I learnt my oath off by heart, and when it actually came to it, they were wonderfully kind to us. The oath was taken in private in the bishop's chapel, and then we were able to relax more, and obviously to take the service very seriously, but not to be standing there with butterflies about the part we would take in it. We were able to look forward to this as a gateway to our ministry and take it seriously, but not with that sort of terror.
And Sheila, you've had some major issues to deal with in life. How have they contributed in your journey to faith?
Well, I am probably a bad learner, that I have been through so many things in my life that have seemed hard and difficult and impossible to understand at the time. But in looking back, you can see that, well, I can see that God has been there with me, that he's held my hand, that my faith has been deepened and strengthened. Now, that all sounds absolutely wonderful, but then we come to the next difficult thing that happens, and do I remember this? No, I don't. I start to protest and start saying the why me that one does. I've always had poor sight since a baby, but it's been manageable. I've trained to be a teacher, I went to university, I did all the usual things, looked after my family. That was, I wouldn't say fine, but no major issue with that until middle age when my sight deteriorated. And I started that experience feeling the why me, oh, this is horrendous. But I can say again that I don't recommend to people that they have bad sight, but it has actually got wonderful plus sides. While I was training to be a reader, not being able to read print for myself has actually opened a door that people from my church, particularly two people whom I did not know well, have volunteered and have come, and they read to me week by week. We've become very close friends, and it has meant that those women have actually, I think, they are part of my ministry, that they have contributed, and that has been wonderful. And without the need to have somebody to read to me, I would not have experienced that. As a family, we had to face a terrible grief just over 10 years ago when our eldest child, our son, was killed in a car crash. And, of course, that's every parent's nightmare. It's been very, very hard. But I have to say that God has been with me in that. He supported me. He's helped me. And perhaps that has given me a greater understanding of people who are facing grief. It doesn't go away. You learn that something like that has to be lived with. Life isn't going to be the same, but you can still find joy and you can find peace, and that life does not end with that. And of course, we've got the Christian hope that supports us.
And what advice would you give to people who are going through difficulties? They just can't seem to see how things are going to work out.
I think there are moments for all of us when that is how we feel. But I think if somewhere, with some small part of your mind, you can realise that even when you hardly feel you're clinging on to God with the tips of your fingers, that He is still holding on to you. And just to grasp that as you can and ask that He'll strengthen your faith, and He never, never lets you down on that one.
And finally, what would you say to anyone who feels that they have a disability or something that is stopping them from being able to do anything that they might consider easy in other circumstances?
Oh, don't be put off by it. And I think that we're created to be the people that God has in mind, and I don't think He takes very much notice of the disabilities from that point of view. Obviously, He helps us with them, but I don't think that He intends us to sit down and think, oh, I can't do that. And I remember that when I had been for my discernment meeting, and I was exploring whether I had this calling, and I felt very much that I had a calling to be a reader. And our then warden of readers came to see me. And I can remember his praying for three things on my behalf, that I would find a way of translating my appalling handwriting, which I'm able to read, but it's really quite appalling, into readable scripts, that I could submit essays, that I would find a way of accessing all the reading material that I needed, because the RNIB are wonderful, but they're not going to deliver on CD format all the specialised books that I would need for the course. And that also I would find a way of travelling to the places I needed to go. My husband's not a driver. And he left that prayer. All I can say is that God has answered that prayer. He's done it through people. He's done it through the members of my church who've translated, you know, one particular lady's translated all my appalling handwriting, typed up my essays. These ladies have come to read to me. The people who've driven me where I needed to go, as well as, you know, the usual people who've given the feedback and the necessary things, and that He's answered that prayer. And it's meant that I haven't really walked this path on my own, which has been wonderful. So just go ahead and do it. And if it's meant to be, pray about it and He'll find a way.
Sheila Fordham from the Diocese of Chichester. That's it for this week's podcast. I'm